Now, Dublin's Liberties are back in the spotlight with a proposal to seek UNESCO recognition for the unique culture of this part of Dublin 8. And an ongoing row over renaming a park in Rathgar has opened a bigger conversation about who we honour, what we keep, and how we tell the story of our capital city. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Sean Defoe. Now, Dublin, like every town and city on this island, it's full of names that carry history. Some of them are ancient, some of them are borrowed, some were misheard in translation, and some stir up debates about who we are in 2025. And the Liberties sit right at the heart of that story. It's one of the oldest parts of Dublin City, shaped by weavers, traders, migrants, revolutionaries, monks, market stallholders, and families whose roots run back for centuries. And now there's a move to have its living culture protected by UNESCO at the same time as Dublin wrestles with what place names should represent in a modern capital. To guide us through the history and the headlines, we're joined by someone who knows these streets better than anyone. Cathy Scuffle is historian in residence for the Dublin South Central part of Dublin City Council. Cathy, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Thank you very much, Sean. Delighted to be here.
Good. So we're going to talk a lot about place names today. The Liberties themselves, like, where does that name come from?
Well, the Liberties was the area of the city outside the control of the city. So that's generally the areas that were outside the city walls. So we're going right back to Norman Dublin, Viking Dublin. The city itself was an enclosed area, and then there were certain areas outside it that had their own independence. They were a support network for the main city, but they wouldn't have had the rights of the city dwellers. They would have had to pay probably a fee or a tariff, to borrow that word, if you were to go into the city itself on certain days of the week. So because the city needed a support network, this grew up around it, and each of those areas were autonomous. They had their own ways, laws, rules, arrangements, and they attracted all the artisans and all the supports that the city would need.
Mm. So would there have been different parts sort of in a ring around the city, be there the Liberties or other parts, maybe on you know, north side, south side, wherever, that were maybe specialising in different things they supplied? Or was it a bit more homogenous than that?
Wouldn't have been just specialising individual things, though certain areas grew up like that because obviously proximity to the city, depending on what side of the city, what side of the Liffey you were on, would depend on what way you would trade. But yes, at one time there were up to 13 Liberties around Dublin. Today, we sort of mangle three together, St. Patrick's, St. Sepulchre's and the Earl of Meath's Liberty. And that's generally accepted as the current Liberties of Dublin, the area outside the city. And it would have been all those things like markets, trading, supplies, foodstuffs, certain things like the coffin making. You didn't need that in your main city. You could deal with that outside. And then, of course, for safety, they would have had all the cooks in Cook Street. So you didn't have open fires really running in the city area itself, because obviously everything was very inflammable. So different things like that would have just grown up traditionally, and those traditions are still with us to a certain extent today.
Yeah, and we see that. I mean, that's not just a Dublin thing. That's sort of wider Europe, if not worldwide. You know, Fishmonger's Alley, Tanner Street. You know, what are the main ones then that would have come out of the Liberties that would be linked to the professions?
Well, I've mentioned Cook Street, that's one. We had Ship Street, which is quite interesting. It's outside the city walls, right behind Dublin Castle. If you look at the Gaelic for that, it's Shrod na Cuairic, so it's possibly from sheep and got corrupted to ship. Though more recently, archaeological digs have suggested that there may actually have been some form of Viking ship building in that area at one time. So it's open to debate. But all the markets, Corn Market, even the High Street, they would more or less lead you to the Market Cross, the area for the trading, for the markets, for all the different things. And then each of the different parishes around would have concentrated on their own at the time. Religion was very important, so the church organised quite a lot of it. Different parishes were organised in different ways.
Mm. Let's talk, I suppose, then about some of the different crafts that you've already mentioned them there, dating back to as far back as Viking times. What are the ones that sort of came through the Liberties that some I know even have a connection all the way up to today?
Well, markets being one, we still have the markets. I mean, it's a thriving market scene, actually, in the Liberties in general. So the market area, the tradition of markets is very much part of the identity of the place. But the trades and crafts, well, weaving is hugely important. I mean, we've quite a number of place names that connect us to the weavers at different stages, at different times through the development of the area. And of course, brewing and distilling. So to break it down, it could be all about drink and religion, but we like to say it's more about history, heritage, craft, culture and community.
And people, I suppose, are part of what makes that, and the resilience of the people. And you can see that particularly when it came to weaving over the years and the various tariffs, to bring it back to another word we've all gotten very familiar with in the last 12 months.
That's very true. I mean, initially, the real industrialised weaving, I mean, weaving actually has about 1,000 years of history in the Liberties area. But to bring it to the industrialised era, that would have been in the late 1600s, 1690 thereabouts. That's when the Huguenot people came to live in the area. So they're French speaking. So initially, they were wool weavers. So to back them up, you would have had people raising livestock in the area. So sheep, probably growing certain crops that could be turned into fibre. Then, believe it or not, 1699, the wool weaving industry in Dublin was so successful, it was putting massive pressure on the weavers in England. So a tariff was introduced on wool. So we couldn't export any of our wool products. So that didn't stop the weavers in Dublin. They switched then to weaving in silk and became absolute experts in silk weaving. And it's a very high-end product, a very highly sought after, highly fashionable item. Again, another tariff's introduced because we're putting the silk weavers out of business on our neighbouring island. And so, just to show you the ingenuity of the Liberties weavers, they devised a way of weaving using a silk warp. Now, a warp is what you put on the frame of the loom, and a weft then is the threads you extend across the warp. So they used a weft of wool and a warp of silk. By doing that, they produced a fabric called poplin, and it was neither silk nor wool, so you couldn't apply a tariff to it. So that, I think, in one fabric shows the ingenuity of the community to find a way around an obstacle. And again, poplin became hugely sought after and probably saved the weaving industry, in my opinion, for about 100 years in the area. The wool element made it very warm. The silk element meant that in candlelight, your gown would shimmer. It gave it sort of a quality, an unusual quality of its own. And it became very sought after, ironically, by the royals in Britain, who wanted it as part of their trousseaus and for the balls and things like that. So a tariff created an obstacle, an opportunity for the weavers in Dublin to find a way around this. And then it went full circle and they became our market.
Fantastic. Total ingenuity to get around the tariff rules. We could use a bit of that today at the moment, I have to say. But,
saying anything.
Yeah. Keep it silent on that one. Let it to history. But the speaking of place names, we've already chatted about them. I didn't know this, that weaving community then led into other place names there that gave us the origins of a very, very famous phrase.
Oh, they did. First of all, you've heard of being on tenterhooks. I think that's the one you might be talking about.
Yeah.
So they were actually frames that the weavers would use to stretch and dry and maybe bleach after they had bleached their cloth. So they would stretch it out to dry across these posts and with hooks on them. Now, these show up quite remarkably on Roke's map, one of the famous maps of Dublin. And you can see them line after line in the fields just outside the city area. Today, we still call that the area the Tenters. It's a beautiful housing estate today. But that is where they dried out their cloth. And so they hung it on tenter hooks, and we still use the phrase on tenter hooks today.
And I have to say my personal favorite one, when we're looking at these different place names, we'll get into more on it in a second, but is the place names that came out of a total mishearing of a word, such as Engine Alley.
Yeah, I love this one. One of the alleys off Mead Street, quite near the, say, for those who know the area, near St. Catherine's Church in Mead Street, there's an alley there called Engine Alley. Other people may know it as the name of a rock band, Engine Alley. However, it shouldn't be Engine Alley. It should be Indian Alley. Indian Alley, where the Indian silks and cottons were traded in a marketplace. So we still have the Liberty Market right beside that. Indian became Indian. An engine became engine. And don't you just love the Dubs?
And that they stuck with it as well. It just stayed through. No, it's Engine Alley now. Yeah.
We live with engine. Engine is fine. But if you're looking up records, like I would be, I come across all these random burials in, you know, St. Werburgh's or in St. James's. And the address given is Indian Alley. And I'm going, where is that? And then I have to do this big long trawl. And then you discover it's just been corrupted completely by the Dubs. Indians became engines and engines became engines, and we live with it today. So there we go.
And you see that a lot along Dublin, sort of names that have evolved over the years, like Misery Hill, for example. There's a good backstory to that.
There is, and that's it sort of has a loose connection to the Liberties, because we're looking, say, during the Norman era in particular, we had a great pilgrimage route that ran right through Dublin. So James's Street is where the Camino, the Dublin Camino, is well known as a starting point even today. But back in Norman times, that's where the travelling pilgrims would gather before they entered into the city of Dublin. So that's why in the streetscape, we have a very wide street there, James's Street. It would have been a market area for travelling pilgrims. So they would buy whatever they needed for the rest of the journey. They're now heading for the port. But one of the things they would have needed before they went on their voyage to northern Spain to continue the Camino was healthcare. So if you were a wealthy pilgrim, you got healthcare in the, ironically, St. James's Hospital, not the one we have today, the one that was located down near Trinity College. They were the wealthy pilgrims. If you weren't that wealthy, you had to go elsewhere to find your healthcare. And that's where Misery Hill came in. And so I think we had a two-tier health system as well back in the era of the Normans. It wasn't the nicest place, but at least you could see the bay and you were getting ready to embark. And one of my students recently remarked, Cathy, we've gone from Misery Hill to Les Miserables, who are now in the theatre down there. And I just thought that was absolutely wonderful. So yes, it fits perfectly.
Oh, gas. So look, we're talking about names. That's the fun side of it. Obviously, yes. It's been in the news for a not so fun size, and this row about the renaming of Herzog Park. What are your thoughts on it? I suppose specifically on this row, but also the naming, because we could pick any number of streets or locations across Dublin that have connections that now we would see as very antiquated or wrong, that go back to the British Empire, or other people who, while they were lauded in their time, by the standards of 2025, we judge them very, very differently. So in general, on the renaming of historic streets, as someone who is so buried in history, what's your opinion?
But first of all, yes, I am buried in history. And in some ways, Sean, you've nearly answered your own question, because we do name things at a moment in time. We do name things in relation to how we feel at that particular time or what's in vogue. So certainly our city reflects our colonial past in the most dramatic forms. And we have place names all over that are connected to the 700 years of history. So do we wipe it out and start again? And I don't think a mature nation does that. I think we acknowledge our history, we commemorate it in various forms, and we have an understanding, exactly as you put it there, we have an understanding that things change, things are in vogue, things are commemorated at a moment in time. But do we change everything then when our minds change? We wouldn't know where we were. Were we to go around and change things like Henry Street, Mary Street, because they commemorate our colonial past, because it's the Earl of Drogheda. So that's where we get Earl Street. Parts of O'Connor Street were originally called Drogheda Street. He was Henry Moore. So we get Henry Street, Moore Street. So do we change everything just because the international opinion has changed, our national opinion has changed, our local opinion has changed? You'd need to make a very strong argument around that. And I love Dublin placings because when I look at them, I can very easily tell the history of Ireland through the place names of Dublin. Mm. And it honours every part of our history, good, bad, and the absolutely amazing. And to me, I don't think we should just change things in a moment in time, because in a year's time, we may think differently again. And I'm not directly fully up to speed with the whole story about the park, but I can understand where the commemoration came from originally, because the Jewish community left a very, very impactful in Irish society, in Dublin society. I mean, parts of where I grew up were known as Little Jerusalem because so many of the Jewish community had settled there. So everybody who comes to live in our city, who comes to it even for a day, leaves something of them behind, leaves some little thing about them behind. And we've seen what the Huguenots can do. We've seen what the Dubs do when they can change a name around. Every single community that's been here have left something of them behind. And that makes it very easy for someone like me to tell the history of not just our city, not just the local area, but really the history of Ireland. We can tell it through the place names that are around.
Yeah. I suppose the flip argument would be, if you asked most people who's Moore Street named after, who's Henry Street named after, they probably couldn't, even Grafton Street, yeah, they probably couldn't tell you. And maybe a lot of people probably say the same about Herzog Park, but it is a more recent naming and one that the world is having a sort of a backlash to what is happening in Palestine at the moment.
Palestine, yeah, and quite rightly so, because a community has been really affected by that. A lot of the, for example, a lot of the Jewish community that came here came from the Ukraine, which is really ironic because there's another war that we're discussing internationally now, and they were fleeing persecution in the early years of the early 1900s, maybe just before that. A lot of them came from Ukraine. We had fundraisers running in the Olympia Theatre at the time to support them when they came over. You know, it's all part of our history. And if we can sort of stand back for a moment and just take stock of what we're about, we can tell the history of our wonderful city through the place names that are there.
Are there rules around renaming or the naming of new streets, for example, in Dublin City Council? Are there certain people you can and can't name it after?
Certainly, there is a much bigger awareness about new developments, that an argument has to be made around a new development to reflect the historic past in some way or other. So it's quite interesting. We've had even Dublin City Council themselves, for example, they opened some new social housing in the Liberties and they called it Poplin Place. Mm-hmm. And the one nearby was called Weaver Place. So they're acknowledging a past of the city, which I thought was really lovely. So rather than just call it Oak View or something random, they actually picked up on the local heritage of the area and they included it in their naming scheme. So again, that makes my job very easy because I can explain the story of Poplin. I can explain the story of the Weavers, who were forced immigrants into our city. I mean, they were brought over to live here. So it's the story of immigration, movement of people back and forth. And yet we can commemorate it by acknowledging that what was here in the past and acknowledging that it still resonates today. And it has given us the reason, I suppose, to for people to seek this UNESCO intangible cultural heritage status.
Well, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about next. In practical terms, what does that mean? I think there's three Irish entrants on the list already. That's hurling, Illan piping and Irish harping. So what from the Liberties? Would it be weaving? Would it be the Liberties culture in general? What are you looking for to be enshrined in UNESCO protection?
It's a very interesting argument. And yes, absolutely, we should celebrate what we've got. And I suppose, as we were saying earlier, like the Liberties is Dublin's, all the Dubs know that the Liberties is Dublin's oldest village. And this status would share that knowledge internationally and nationally, because the culture of the area has been somewhat under pressure recently, I suppose, because there's been a lot of developments. And this goes back to road plans that were in the making in the 1940s and came to being in the 1970s and the 1980s. So there's been a slow hollowing out of the area population-wise. But now the population is starting to grow again. I mean, there's 7 schools in the General Liberties area. There are young families. There's a neighbourhood there, a very strongly minded community. And I think giving it some form of recognition and understanding and appreciating that it has a uniqueness all of its own. It stands on its own. It has its own identity. The locals know that. Wider Dubliners certainly would appreciate that too. And I think it just needs to be strengthened in some way. And this would probably go a long way towards that. In Weaving alone, when we did an analysis of it, there are approximately 51 either place names or locations that are connected to that industry in that small Liberties area. And they're the types of things that we need to highlight and appreciate further, the impact that had on the general area. And then moving forward, the impact of the brewing, distilling. We would often, you know, laughingly, people would say Ireland and Guinness all in one sentence. So, but Guinness is in the Liberties of Dublin. So that's another part of the heritage of the area that we have shared with the world. And this would give them another opportunity to share even more of what we've got.
So is it a case of there's a bit more pressure on the government if this is granted, and when they're considering things like, say, planning applications for new hotels, which are popping up around Dublin or have been over the last few years, much to the chagrin of people who enjoyed what was there before, that maybe they'd have to take that into account and say, is that the general idea, rather than this is some very tangible thing that enshrines it forever?
In the same way that when a county wins the All-Ireland, they get a new identity, you know, a new appreciation of what it is to be a Dub or be from Galway or whatever, you know, whoever has won more recently. In that way, you know, that little recognition, that little awareness that there's something a bit special about it. And that would filter from the top down. Certainly from the bottom up, it's there. I mean, the people themselves understand that they are in a different part of Dublin, in a special part of Dublin, despite all the developments that are going on around them. But they have lost a lot. They've lost 3 theatres, believe it or not, from the area in the last few years. Lost community centres. You know, we have a proliferation of coffee shops. But there's more to the area than drinking coffee. You know, there's more to being in the area, to having that understanding of how it works. And I just think things, just any form of little recognition, whatever form that takes, and even the conversation that's been had around the UNESCO application has made a difference. People are more aware. The first question would be, why would you go for that? And then they start thinking about it and saying, why not? Because this is something quite unique and has so much to offer. And if it got this status, or even has a big conversation around getting the status, I think the mindset, the reset button is pressed, and people say, well, hang on, let's consider what we're trying to do here. Do we just want to turn it into a student dormitory, or do we want to preserve what's there and work with what's there and share it with the locals, nationally and internationally?
Well, thank you for sharing it with us and sharing the history. I certainly have a much greater insight of the area, someone who's not from Dublin, than I ever had before after that. Cathy Scuffle, historian, storyteller, Dublin 8 champion, I suppose. Thank you for joining us.
Best of luck.
And you. That's it for today's podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard, please do give us a like or a rating so that you never miss an episode. I'm Sean Defoe, and we'll be back here again, same time tomorrow.